Real estate is developed by land speculators who move in, lay down roads and infrastructure, and then resell lots at a profit. Not that different from current real estate development. And that's actually the way the Northwest Ordinance, the Northwest Territories will be settled. The critical figure in this is a fellow by the name of the Reverend Manasseh Cutler, who's a lobbyist for the Ohio Company, and he works out a deal whereby his company will purchase outright 1.5 million acres of the Northwest area under the following conditions, which he gets in the Northwest Ordinance of 1787. That there not be local self-government, that in fact the government be imposed by Washington, or at this point I should say, the colonial capital, which is probably Annapolis, that the government be comprised of a governor and judges appointed by the Congress, and that only when they reach 5,000 adult male voters will they be allowed to have a legislature. Even then, they cannot join the Union until they've reached 60,000 persons. And while slavery is prohibited in line with Jefferson's original vision, contracts are also insisted that they will be strictly enforced in the new territories. So what we see here is that in reality, the way the West will be settled is the same way that suburban tracts are settled today, by real estate developers who lay down the infrastructure that allows farmers to produce productively and exchange for market. There's also a contradiction between Jefferson's ideals of agrarianism and the actual realities of the state of Virginia. And he even puts this in the notes. I want to quote two important paragraphs. The majority of men in the state, and here he's referring to Virginia, who pay and fight for its support, are unrepresented in the legislature. The roll of freeholders entitled to vote, not including generally the half of those on the roll of the militia or of the tax gatherers. And among those who share the representation, the shares are very unequal. Thus, the county of Warwick, with only 100 fighting men, has an equal representation with the county of Loudoun, which has 1,746. Similarly ambivalent are Jefferson's statements on slavery. And I want to devote the rest of this lecture to those because I think they're quite important. On the one hand, there can be no doubt. Jefferson is a radical, outspoken opponent of slavery. On the other hand, he's a tortured racist. And it's this conflict between these two elements which really paralyzes him and, I would argue, tortures his thinking about slavery. Well, first, his opposition to slavery. He acknowledges that slavery is wrong. It's a moral wrong. It's an economic wrong. It's a social wrong. It violates the natural rights of Africans and impairs the character and sensibilities of their masters. I want to read the following passage, which, when John Adams read it, said, "This passage is worth diamonds." It's in his answer to the question on manners. "The whole commerce between master and slave is a perpetual exercise of the most boisterous passions, the most unremitting despotism on the one part and degrading submissions on the other. Our children see this and learn to imitate it. The parent storms, the child looks on, catches the lineaments of wrath, puts on the same airs in the circle of smaller slaves, gives a loose to his worst of passions, and thus nursed, educated, and daily exercised in tyranny, cannot but be stamped by it with odious peculiarities." One can't help wondering if Jefferson is being self-referential here, is thinking about the impact on his own character of his experience with slavery. He writes, "The man must be a prodigy who can retain his manners and morals undepraved by such circumstances. And with what execration should the statesman be loaded, who, permitting one half the citizens thus to trample on the rights of the other, transforms those into despots, and these into enemies, destroys the morals of the one part and the amor patrie of the other. For if a slave can have a country in this world, it must be in any other in preference to that in which he is born to live and labor for another." Well, Jefferson is that statesman. And I think Jefferson is tortured over this problem. He points out, of the proprietors of slaves, a very small proportion indeed are ever seen to labor. That speaks to his own condition. Jefferson has never been behind a plow. He's speaking of himself. "Indeed, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, that his justice cannot sleep forever, that considering numbers, nature, and natural means only, a revolution of the wheel of fortune, an exchange of situation, is among possible events, that it may become probable by supernatural interferences. The Almighty has no attribute which can take side with us in such a contest."